Right, we're going to begin here, bottom Nun Pet Amud Bet, by the beginning of the new Perek. The Perek now describes how one comes about calculating the tchum of the city, which is Kesad Ma'abrim et Ha'arim. How do we make an ibur to the cities? Now, Ma'abrim, we'll see in the Gemara, is going to discuss exactly what the word means and how it's spelled. But how do we square out the cities? Bayit Nichnas, Bayit Yotzei. If you have a house protruding from the walls of the city, or you have a house that's inlaid, indented in the wall, then you draw a straight line from the outermost house, the one that protrudes the most, and you draw a straight line across that side, and that becomes the border for that side, so that the tchum on that side is all even and not uneven. Same thing with pagum nichnas, pagum yotzei. If you have, Rashi describes them as turrets, the walls that are built with the circular towers that are on the walls, sometimes those circular towers protrude outwards, sometimes they are laid inward. If you have those going in and out, again, you would draw a straight line from the outermost one, and that would be the line for the end of the city. That's the way Rashi describes it. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that Perush Pagum is binyan kamo shovach. It's some sort of building like a dovecot, some sort of extension in the wall that's not part of the wall itself, but has something that's functional for the city, and that's considered to be an extension of the city. Hayusham gidudulyot gvot asarat fachim. If there are remnants of houses or parts of the wall that are at least 10 tfachim high, so you have charavot that are at least 10 tfachim high that are adjacent to the city or within the ibur of the city, then they are also included as part of the city, and you widen out the perimeter of the city to begin the counting of the tchum from those areas that are beyond the city. For instance, here, where there are charavot, these are old houses, but they're at least 10 fachim high, so that they have significance. V'ksharim v'nefashot sheyesh behen beit dira. You have bridges, or nefashot are monuments, but here they are like sepulcher, which is the monuments over a grave. So Tosafot says, by definition, the nefashot already have a place for someone to sit, because that's the whole point of the monument above the grave, which is that someone can come and sit there, whether they're guarding the grave or whether they come there to daven, but there is something there that makes space for someone. And Gisharim would have someone that lives there, probably the toll collector, someone that would live by the bridge. These are binyanim. These are buildings that are not normally for living in, but here they included a place for someone to live. Again, Tosafot focuses on Gesharim. Others say that the Beit Dira is modifying both of them. Motzim et amida kenegdan. Then you move out the line that defines the perimeter of the city to those areas, because those Beit Dira become a part and parcel of the city. Motzim ota kemin tavla mirubat. You make it a squared out platform, but not necessarily. It's squared only if the city is squared. It could be a rectangle. The point is that it's as opposed to circular. We're not looking at something that is a radius of 2,000 amot around the city that creates a circle around it, but rather you square out the area of the city.
But it has to be four
corners.
Four.
Correct. There has to be a four-cornered definition of the perimeter of the city, and the corners or the edges will be determined by these items that are the furthest out from the city, and wherever they are, you'll draw a straight line to create that type of square. We'll see later on in the Gemara, Rashi discussed it earlier, that you squared out the Ruchot HaOlam based on the absolute north, absolute south, as the west, that you do it based on that. That's how it squared out the city against the Ruchot HaOlam. Kedei she'en iskar et hazaviyot. The benefit of a square over a circle is the corners. Because if you put a square around the circle, then the radius will be the distance of the centers of the sides of the square away from the walls are from that area, but the corners will be a hypotenuse of a triangle, and that will be the extra distance that you gain by using a square or a rectangle or some sort of four-cornered shape instead of the circle. Right. The reason we saw in last parak was because by Arei Alibim it uses the term pat or peot. Rashi means either a side or a corner, and so because of that we use a square and not a circle. Okay, now we're going to move on to one little machlog between Rav and Shmuel about our Mishnah, and that's going to launch us into a series of agadotot that will take us through the rest of today's daf, which is Rav and Shmuel, chatani me'abrim The question of the word me'abrim in our Mishnah, whether it's spelled with an ayin or is it spelled with an aleph? Mantan de'atani me'abrim is aver aver. Me'abrim comes the word aver, means limb limb. Just like the person's limbs are of an equal size. So to over here, when you have a protrusion from the city that looks like a limb, you even it out on the other side. And that's what it means, me'abrim. Me'abrim means you even it out like the limbs, everything. If you have an extension on the northeastern side, you do the same on the southeastern side to make it that it is even. One who says, Uman detani me'abrim, with an ayin, is kisha ubra. It's like a pregnant woman who, again, the extension or the protrusions are like the pregnant woman, and those are evened out. So the me'abrim here is describing these extensions or protrusions from the city. And so the Mishnah is telling us, what do you do with these? What do you do with these protrusions? What do you do with these extensions? And the answer in both cases is that we even it out, too. We square it off on that side. Me'arat ha-machpelah. Now we're going to move on to a series of machlokot between Rav and Shmuel that are somewhat connected, but mostly just because they're machlokot, Rav and Shmuel, are they all brought together here. So, Marat HaMachpelah, the double cave, Rabu Shmuel, Chanamar, Shnei Batim, Ze, Lifnim, Mizeh. One of them says that it's a chamber inside of a chamber. Chanamar, Bayit Valia Al-Gabav, that it's a two-floored cave, an upper floor and a lower floor. Bishvul HaMalaman Demar, Ze, Al-Gab, Ze, according to the one who says that they were one on top of the other, Hainu Machpelah, that's why you would use the term double. Alaman damar shnei batim zeh lifnei mizeh, that it was one inside of the other, my machpelah. Why would you use the term machpelah, double?
Why not?
Rashi says that the term machpelah is that it's split somehow. So when you're up and down, that type of split would be called a machpelah, but if you have them back one inside of the other, you wouldn't use the term machpelah. That's not the typical term that you would have used in that case. That's what Rashi claims. That's a Gemara's assumption, that the word Machpelah would only be used in a situation where you were up and down, that there's a duplication on one on top of the other, whereas if they were one inside of the other, captive to each other, that Machpelah is the wrong term. So he says, my Machpelah, according to that Deyash, Fula Bezugot. It has doubles of the pairs, or multiple pairs, because Mamre Kiryat Arba, that the Torah, when it describes this area, Mamre Kiryat Arba, Amrav Yitzhak Kiryat Arba Zugot. It's the city of the four Zugot, Adam V'Chava, Abraham V'Sara, Yitzhak V'Rivka, Yaakov V'Leah. Truthfully, the Psukim only lay out six of those pairs. In Vayechi, when Yaakov is describing Marat HaMavachelah, it says Sham Kuvar, that there was buried there was Abraham and Sarah, Yitzhak and Rivka, and now Yaakov Leah, Yaakov wants to be the one to be buried there after he buried Leah there. He said, I buried Leah there and not Rachel. That's obviously he's describing to Yosef, or telling Yosef why he didn't bury Rachel there. So in that pasuk is described for three out of the four pairs that are there. The Midrash here says, Kiryat Arba. Arba is the Arba Zugot, that there was actually a fourth pair, which was Adam V'Chava, that's not mentioned explicitly in the pasuk. And that's what the meaning of the word Machpelah is, Shekfula B'Zugot, that it has multiple pairs inside of it. So you have Zugot in the plural, and then you have Machpelah, which is two times that, so you end up with the four Zugot that are there. Vahi bimei Amrafel, Rabu Shmuel, Chadamar Nimrod Shmo, Velamani Kra Shmo Amrafel, Shamar Vipio LaAbraham Avinu B'tov Kivshan Ha'esh. So this is the famous Midrash about the origins of Abraham Avinu's belief in monotheism, that he destroys all the idols, and then his father brings him to, Terach brings him to Nimrod or Amrafel, and Amraphel punishes him with being thrown into the fire. That's why he's called Amraphel, because he was throwing Abraham Avinu into the Kivshan Ha'esh. That's his, we call it nickname. His real name is Nimrod. V'chadamar Amraphel Shemo, that his real name is Amraphel. V'lamikar Shemo Nimrod. Shemridit kol olam kolo, alav v'malchuto. Because he took his kingdom to have all the world rebel against Malchuto is a Lashon Saginor, I mean against the kingdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is possibly by Migdal Babel, or in other situations in which he is Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem, is the description of Nimrod. So in one of those two circumstances, the Midrash takes the opportunity in both of those to mention that Nimrod was a leader in both of those areas. Vayakam Melech Hadash al Mitzrayim, Rav Ushmael, There was a new king on Mitzrayim, Chadamar Chadash Mamash. There really was a new king, Chadamar Shinit Chadesh Gzerutav. That the king himself wasn't new, he just had new decrees. Mandamar Chadash Mamash Tichtiv Chadash. Because it says new king. That means new king, literally. Mandamar Shinit Chadshu Gzerutav, Melok Tiv. Doesn't have the typical literary layout of a new king, which is Vayamat Vayimloch, that the previous king died, and then Vayimloch Tachtav, that you have the new king that comes to power. Since it doesn't have that normal literary style here, the possibility is that he wasn't a new king, but simply that his decrees were renewed or changed. He didn't know Yosef. Maya Shelo Yadat Yosef. How can he say that? If he's the same king, how does he not know Yosef? Daba Domi Kamandal Dali Yosef Klal. He acted as if he didn't remember the Yosef at all. Not that he didn't necessarily remember him because he had supposedly interacted with him, but he didn't pay attention or pay heed to the fact that he knew or was aware of what Yosef had done for him, and it was as if he didn't recognize or acknowledge Yosef's contribution to Mitzrayim. That would be true, I think, in both senses. The answer is probably that it's both. Hayakam el Chadash in Mitzrayim is many years after Yosef has passed away, and both are true. It's a new king, and he also doesn't acknowledge Yosef's contribution to Mitzrayim, the lack of Hakarat HaTov, and the two together are Vayakam Melech Chadash, both Rav and Shmuel say. Unless you interpret Vayakam Melech Chadash, Asher Yadat Yosef, is the view of Bnei Israel themselves, how they view the king, or how they understand the situation, and that the Asher Yadat Yosef is not referencing the king, but rather Bnei Yisrael, that they don't recall, that they don't understand the context in which all of this is happening. They have a similar psukim at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim that speak about Bnei Yisrael's lack of ability to see or understand that which was done. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yudchet Yamim Gidalti Etzel Rabbi Hoshaya Berivi. There were 18 days that I spent with Rabbi Hoshaya Berivi, as Rashi says here, Berivi is an Adam Gadol B'doro, someone who's a big name in his generation, a big person. And he says, that's the meaning of Ribi, anytime you see that in Shas. And he says, I learned one thing from him, with regards to the Mishnah, that our Mishnah, when it says, it's spelled with an Aleph, not with an Ayin. Is that really true? Bama Rabbi Yochanan, Yudbet Talmidim Ayulo, the Rabbi Hoshaya Beribi. He had 12 students. Yudchet Yamim Gidalti Benehem. I spent these 18 days amongst them. Lamadati Leiv Kol Echad Vechad, Vechachmad Kol Echad Vechad. I understood then the strengths of each one of his Talmidim and wisdom that they contained. I really got to know them well. So Gemara says, you're right. Leiv Kol Echad Vechad, Vechachmad Kol Echad Vechad Gamar. He did. He understood. He was able to discern the difference amongst the Talmidim, what their strengths and weaknesses were, as well as the wisdom that they contained. But Gemara lo gamar. But he didn't learn anything necessarily. He understood their character, their personalities, but that doesn't mean that he learned something. That's one answer. Ibai zema minayu tihu gamar, minay didei lo gamar. He didn't learn anything directly. Only one thing that he learned directly from Rabbi Hoshaya Berivi, but from the students he learned much more. V'ibayitema, and a third possibility is, davar achad b'mishnatenu gamar, that he learned one thing about the Mishnah, but in Braitot and Gemarot, he learned significantly more than that. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, shayinu lomdim Torah etzel Rabbi Hoshaya, aninushim arba'a b'yama, when we were sitting, learning by Rabbi Hoshaya Beribi, we used to sit four people in an ama. Amar Rabbi, Rabbi says, k'shayinu lomdim Torah etzel Rabbi Elezer ben Shemua, Hainu Yashim Shisha Biyama. We were sitting six in an Ama. So they were even more crowded. Rashi describes it as being a positive, that they were all rushing up, or they wanted to be close to the Rebbe, they wanted to hear what he was saying, so they were in tight quarters because they were all trying to be in front, they all wanted to be close to hear what the Rebbe said. So by Rabbi Hoshaya Berivi, it's described as four in an Ama, and here by Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, it's described six in Ama. They are also the possibility that it was done this way in Europe also because of poverty, that they were only able to afford one text that they could be together with, or from the perspective of heat, or being able to be close together, keep themselves warm, that they used to huddle together. So any one of those is true, possibly true here as well, that they were four in Amar, six in Amar, that they were very tight together.
Said that they were very
I don't think literal, it was very close quarters. The Gemara in other places talks about the ability to get along, meaning that the Dorot HaRishonim, Yisrael said, Shishav Talit Echad, that they were able to share and cooperate in that way. And later on, with the Talmidim, they had to sit separately, they had to have their own spaces. It was also a sign of their anivut and their cooperation, their ability to learn together in close type of quarters, versus later on where everybody needed their elbow room, so on and so forth. Not literally that there were four, six in Amah, because we know that an Amah is only sufficient for one person to sit in it. So I'm Rav Yochanan, Rav Oshaya b'Rivi b'Doro, k'Rabbi Meir b'Doro. Rav Oshaya in his generation was equivalent to Rabbi Meir in his generation. My Rabbi Meir, which we saw earlier in the Masechta b'Doro, lo yachlu k'avi rav lamod al sof dato, that they couldn't totally comprehend or understand his positions, because he could basically dance circles around them, and whatever he said, he could prove. So, Av Rabbi Oshaya, lo yachlu k'avi rav lamod al sof dato. Same thing, Rabbi Oshaya, he was far advanced than his peers, and so he could basically defend any position that he took. Av Rabbi Yochanan, liban shel rishonim k'pitcho shel ulam, the hearts of the earlier generations were like the doorway of the ulam, which is bigger, it's 20 amot wide. Shlachonim, the later generations, k'pitcho shel echal, which is only 10 amot wide, meaning that they're half the size of those in the previous generations. When we say a big heart here, we're not talking about in chesed, but the ability to understand and for the wisdom to penetrate. V'anu, in our generation, the melo nekev, machat sitakit, like the hole in the needle, but this is a needle that's used to stitch up small tears in clothing. So it's a very fine needle. So the hole of that needle, we are that size. Rishonim, so who are these Rishonim? Rabbi Akiva. Acharonim, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. And the later generations referring to Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Igad Amre, there's some that say, Rishonim is Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, who Rabbi described before as learning by him. Acharonim are Rabbi Oshaya Berebi, who Rabbi Yochanan describes as learning by him.
So it's mentioning as the first generation, Rabbi Akiva, who's the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, who was the Rebbe of Rabbi. So that would be the first Rishonim Acharon. Or in the second case, it mentions the Rebbe of Rabbi, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, and a Rabbi of Rabbi Yochanan, who would be Rabbi Yoshaya Berebi.
V'anu k'mon negev machatz didakit, amra baye v'anan. So Abaye says we're even later generation than them. We are kesichta beguda de gamra. We are like a peg that you jam into the wall, that you put into the wall for gemara, for the ability to learn or to accumulate wisdom. That's how difficult it is for us. We're trying to stick the peg or jam the peg into the hole. That's as if there's no space there. As if there's nothing. And amarava anan ki etzbato bekira the svara. When it comes to svara, when it comes to understanding and the ability to extrapolate from what we have learned, it's like our finger going into wax, hard wax, where it barely penetrates. So Ravashi, Anan, now Ravashi was even a later generation, right, the tail end of the Amoraim, Anuk, Etzbata, Bebira, Leshichucha. We're like putting a finger into a cistern when it comes to forgetting. It's just easy, it's so easy for us to forget everything we learned. That's how we are like the Shichucha. So before we started on the side, we were talking about the size of the hearts, the opening, the ability to accumulate wisdom. We're talking about Pitcho Shel Ulam, Pitcho Shel Eichal, and then other smaller holes. Over here, he's talking in the reverse about, forget about wisdom and accumulation of wisdom, but our forgetting is that size. That's like putting a finger into a cistern where it's just continuous that we forget everything that we learned. As we move from one Masechta to the next, we forget what we learned in the previous Masechta.
I'm Rav Yudah Marav.
B'nei Yudah shikbiru al lishonam nitzkaima toratam biyadam. The people of Yudah who were makpid on the way that they spoke, their Torah was preserved. B'nei Galil shloik pidu al lishonam. B'nei Galil, on the other hand, were not as careful with the way they spoke. Nitzkaimu toratam biyadam. Where it says, mida bikpeda taya milta. What does it have to do with the fact whether you have a pleasant way of speaking or not a pleasant way of speaking? Why should that have anything to do with the memory or the remembering of Torah? Ella. B'nei Yudah, the Daiki Lishna, who were very careful about the style or language in which they heard something, lahu simana, and therefore they were able to give mnemonics to remember it, Ninkaima Toratam Biyadam. They were very exacting about what they learned from their Rebbeim, and they were careful to say it over in the Lashon of their Rebbeim, and therefore they were able to give mnemonics or memory aids to remember what they said, because they kept a consistent Mesorah about how things were said. B'nei Galil, d'lo daigi lishna, who were not as careful about how they received it, d'lo atnechei lehu simono, and therefore they weren't able to give mnemonics or simanim, lo nitkaima toratan biyadam. because they kept hearing it. Even though they heard the same memra, they would hear it in different languages or different ways of formulating it, and that would confuse them or cause them the inability to make simanim or mnemonics to remember that which they heard. Bnei Yehuda gamru michad rabo, nitzkaimah toratam biyadam. Bnei Yehuda learned from a single Rebbe. That's why they're able to keep or preserve the Torah. Whereas Bnei Galil, delo gamru michad rabo, didn't learn from a single Rebbe, learned nitzkaimah toratam biyadam. This is a continuation of what we said before, which is the Gamra Michad Rabo, if you learn from a single Rebbe, then there's a consistency in the language that is used and in the presentation of the Gemara that they are accumulating. And therefore, they're able to remember it and put mnemonics and simanim to it. On the other hand, if you learn from multiple Rebbeim, they could say the same thing or the same memra in different lashonot, and that will cause confusion or the inability to remember it. As Tosafot points out, this is only true when it comes to Gemara. This only comes to actual memorization or accumulation of wisdom, that it's important to have one Rebbe. But when it comes to Havana, when it comes to understanding or the ability to extrapolate or expand on what you've learned, then it's important to have multiple Rebbeim because you need different perspectives. In order to expand on your wisdom, you need multiple perspectives, and there, it's better to have multiple Rebbeim. But here we're talking about the accumulation of knowledge and wisdom, and that's Gemara. There, it's better to have a single Rebbe in order to ensure the preservation of that which you've learned. Here, the Gemara is clear that you have to accumulate the wisdom first in order to then apply Sivara. I mean, the Gemara says, and a brachot, Sinai Boker Harim, Sinai Aldif. There are those that argue that it's only true when there wasn't a printed book where everything had to be committed to memory, that it was different then. So today, where you don't have to do that, then maybe it changes. Although, bottom line is, in the end, you can make all the Sivarot in the world and all have a note in the world. If you don't have basic knowledge, then you have what you call Pupul Shodolfi, because you don't really know what you're being mefalpel about, because you don't have the other pieces of knowledge. Ravina Amar, Bnei Yehuda, the Galu Masechta, Nitkaimu Tarotam Biyadam. Ravina says, Bnei Yehuda, now Galu, here the word can be used in multiple ways. Rashi brings two interpretations. One is, Galu is Lamdu Le'achirim, they taught others. Or, Lishna Achrina of Galu is, Mifashim Shmuel Tehem, Umudaktimim B'tamosho Dvar, Yeshev Libam. One possibility is, the Galot means to make available, to expose, which means to teach others. On the other hand, the other possibility is to make it clear, to come to a full understanding of that which they learned, and that would be to galu, to make it easy to understand or exposed in that manner. So one of those two, that's what Bnei Yehuda did, so therefore their Torah was preserved. Either because they didn't teach others, which is a way to preserve that which you've learned, or they didn't put together what they had heard in a way or in a manner that they understood it clearly, because the more you understand it, the easier it is to transmit it and to maintain it. David Gali Masechta, Shaul Lo Gali Masechta. So the Gemara takes this from the broader context of Bnei Yehuda, Bnei Gil, down to David and Shaul. So David did do this, where Shaul didn't do this. David Gali Masechta, Ktiv Bei. David, who did act in this manner, it's written about him, Yire Echa Yiruni V'Ismachu. Those that fear you, meaning referring to Hashem, Yiruni, they will see me, v'ismachu, and they will celebrate, they will be happy, because David HaMelech had his learning be al-pi alocho, or be hilchato. We know that from the Agarata back in the Gemara and Shabbat, that he used to be mitapel with Torah, with Nidot and Dam Nidot, as well as the Gemara Brachot, that he was asuk, and he learned by his Rebbe, Achitofel. He learned by his Rebbe Achitofel, and he used to show him all the different questions that he had and say, Rebbe, did I get it right? Did I not get it right? He was very humble, and he ensured that he understood what he was learning or he did. And therefore, he was Gali Masechta, and he gives the praise of Yerucha Yeruni Bismachu. Shaul Delo Gali Masechta. Shaul, on the other hand, who didn't do this, obviously this is a Mesora, because we don't have any evidence of the fact that he wasn't Gali Masechta. Aktiv Bei, Ubechol Asher Yifneh Yoshia. Everywhere he turns, there was evil. Now, this is very interesting. The Gemara here is interpreting it in the negative form, that wherever he turned, Allah was not like him, that it was a nikba ayado. But the pasuk, in its context, is actually a positive pasuk. Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph talks about Shaul taking on the enemies of Klal Yisrael, and then it says there, ubekol asher yifneh yarshia. Everywhere he turned, he caused bad for the enemies. I mean, that he caused confusion and disorderliness amongst the enemies. He attacked, he subjugated the Plishtim on all the other nations that surrounded Bnei Israel. So in the context of the Pasuk, it's actually written as a positive statement. Here the Gemara takes it out of context and makes it into something that is negative, that everywhere he turned, it was bad, bad meaning that the halacha was not like him. Now we know that Hashem forgave Sha'ol for the sin of Ir Nova Kohanim, Shnemar, because when at the end of his life, the day before he dies, he goes to the Balat Ov and his Malesh Shmuel to find out what's going to happen in this battle with the Plishtim. Shmuel says to him, Machar atav benecha imi, that tomorrow you and your children will be with me. Sha'ol and his children die in the battle with the Plishtim at Har Gilboa. And he says, Imi b'michitzati, you're going to be with me in my mechitza. You're going to be in the same place as me. And that would only be true if he was forgiven for the sin of killing out Ir Nov HaKohanim. Am Rabbi Abba, mi ika de mashal hu de bnei Yehuda, de daiki lishne. There's someone here who can ask someone from Yehuda who are careful about Lashana, which is ma'abrimtan or ma'abrimtan. Is the Mishnah spelled with an aleph or an ayin in our Mishnah? Akuzu tanan o akuzu tanan. This is from a Mishnah in Bechorot about how you deal with one of the mumim of the Bechor. You have to throw it back on its buttocks. Question is it spelled with an aleph or an ayin there where you have to throw the shore back on its back so that you can test something out about its testicles? So is it spelled with an aleph or an ayin? So yeah, they know it. So I want to have someone inquire of them. Shalin who? They ended up asking them, Vamile, Ika the Tani Mabrin, Vika the Tani Mabrin. Some say with an aleph, some say with an ayin, Vika the Tani Akuzu, Vika the Tani Akuzu. Some say with an aleph, some say with an ayin. Meaning that there wasn't anything definitive on these Mishnayot, and that's why there is some confusion about them, because they were both misorot. Bnei Yehuda, Daiki Lishna Mahi. Give us examples of this fact that Bnei Yehuda are very careful about how they speak. Dar Bar Yehuda, Damar Lo, Talit Yesh Lidim Kor. I have this cloak to sell. Amalei, my gavan, talitcha, what is the color of your talit? Amar Lo, he said to them, Kitradin Ale Adama. They're like the beets that grow out of the ground. Well, it's interesting. Rashi says that it's greenish in nature, or yellowish in nature, which imply that the tradin here is spinach. Although in the Gemara in general, teret is used as a term for beets, not the modern-day term of teret. I guess, right, so the leaves of the beet, maybe, that are green, that are sticking out of the ground. What is an example of the Bnei Gila that are not careful about their language? Now here, the Gemara is going to have numbers of examples of a Bnei Gila trying to express something, but because they don't speak clearly or they don't enunciate the words or the letters, they end up with a lot of confusion. He was going along and saying, Amar Laman, Amar Laman. Who has an Amar? Who has an Amar? Now the people back to him, you foolish Galilean, what are you saying here? They couldn't understand what he was saying because he was not enunciating the first letter of the word. Are you saying Chamar, the Mirkav, a donkey to ride on? Or are you saying chemar lemishteh, wine to drink? Or are you saying amar lemobash, wool to wear? Oh, imar litkasa, or are you talking about a lamb to shecht? Because he didn't enunciate or pronounce the first letter clearly, they were uncertain as to what that he was trying to say. Whether it was a chet, an aleph, an ayin. And so that is the confusion, the imprecision of the Galileans in their language. Hi itata dubaila meimar lechaverta. She wanted to say to her friend, Tai duchli chalba, come over so that we can have some fat. We can eat some schmaltz together. Amrila instead, she said to her, Shluchti tuchlech lebaya. You should throw yourself to the lions to eat. Because she wasn't pronouncing the words. You can see here that the Tai duchlech became Shluchti tuchlech lebaya instead of chalba. So again, this imprecision of the pronunciation caused a misunderstanding about what she wanted to say. Hi, itzata dati the kamei de daino, came in front of the dayan. Amrelei, mare kire. So here she says, mare kire, which is the master, the slave, instead of saying kire with a kuf, which would imply an adon, a real master. Kire with a kuf is a slave. Tafla havadli, she wanted to say tavla, and instead she said tafla or tifla havadli. And Rashi says it's a korah, v'ganvuch min v'kadu havat, v'kad shadrulach iluvei lomati karech ara. It was stolen. V'kadu havat, if you were to stand it up and hang yourself on it, you wouldn't reach the ground. And what she was trying to say was that it was taller than you, or higher than you, but she ended up saying that if you stand it up and you hang from it, as something that was impolite and something that was offensive, she said, well, if you were hanging from it, your feet wouldn't reach the ground. So again, this impreciseness with the language or an impoliteness about their language in expressing themselves because they didn't say it clearly. So instead of saying that it was stolen from me, she says that
the Dayan Ganvuchmin, that you stole it, and it was bigger than you, by you hanging on it, or the Rabbeinu Chananel expresses it, that it was his child, Ani Uverei Havai, it was me and my child, but whatever it was that she was trying to say, she ended up expressing it in an imprecise manner. So Amhata Debei Rabbi, the maidservant of Rabbi's household, who's famous for the story at the end of Ketubot, where she decides that Rabbi has suffered enough, and that the Talmidim are davening that Rabbi should not pass away, that she throws something down on the ground to cause them to seize the David, and allowing Rabbi to pass away. I don't know if it's the same Amhata, that maidservant, or we have in other places that the maidservant and Rabbi lived very long life. There are stories about the maidservants. I'm not sure if it's the same one, or there were multiple of them. But this maidservant of Bei Rabbi, Gava Mishtai Belashon Chokma Amra Hochi, when she wanted to speak in a wise manner, here being that she didn't want others to understand, but she wanted to convey a message to them, she would say, Alat Nakacht Bikad. She said that the ladle banged against the wall of the barrel. Yad'un Nishraya L'kineihom. The eagles should fly to their nests. So she was saying, basically, we ran out of wine. The Talmidim should go home. So that was the way she expressed it, by saying that the ladle was making noises against the barrel, and the eagles should return to their nests. V'kad ava boy l'litvon, when she wanted them to sit down, on the other hand, ava amra lo ya'adei batar chaverta, the crown should go after its friend, batar chaverta mina, v'tit kafe alat v'kad, and the ladle should float in the barrel, ke'ilfa d'azla b'yama, like the boat floats along the waters, or along the ocean. So here, a case where either they ran out of wine in one barrel, so she was saying, open up the next barrel, or she's saying, flip off the top of this barrel like we did with its friend, to open it up, and then the ladle will float on top. There'll be plenty of wine, because the ladle's floating on top, so come sit down, because there's plenty to drink. Rabbi Yossi Bar Asyan, Ki Ava Mishtai V'Lashon Chochma, again, when he wanted to express something that others wouldn't exactly understand, but he wanted to convey a message, Amar, Asule shorba mishpat betur miskein. Make for me a shor bedin. So now, if you take that shor in Aramaic is tor, mishpat is din, then you get the word together is tradin. So make for me tradin betur miskein. The way Rashi interprets it is that it is tor is a har, miskein is a dal. So har dal, that would be mustard seed. So that's the play on tor miskein. I thought to myself that it could be turmusin that he's trying to describe over here, which is also something that was eaten in their day, a delicacy in their day. When he wanted to know about a host in some place, he would say to them, Gvar pum dein chai mazu tova yesh. So the way the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it, that ushpiza is made up of gvar is ish, pum dein, and za or ze. So this gvar pum dein is the acronym Ushpiza, this individual, Chai, is he alive? That's alive, or that's there. Mazu tova yesh. What type of good does he have? Meaning, is it a good place to stay? Is this person an appropriate place to stay? When he used to speak in these riddles or these hints, he used to say this, Itrigu lepachamin, you should make the holes red like an etrog. Arkiu lezavin, flatten out the zahav, right over here means expose them, bring them forward. Vaseli shnei magidei balata. And bring for me two that tell us about the darkness or the transition to night or to daylight. So he was saying, first of all, heat up the coals. Get the coals fired up, that's the red. And then lay them out on top or in front so that I can get their heat. I can be heated up by them or so that I can cook with them. And then make for me two chickens. Shnei Magidei Balata, those are Hanoten Safim Vina, which is that they are the ones that discern between night and day or the times of the night. So bring me two of those along with it. Or Igadam Rav Yasuli Bahen Shnei Magidei Balata. Make on these coals for me two chickens that discern in the nighttime or in the darkness. Amalei Rabbanon the Rabbi Abau, Atzpininu Heichan Rabbi Elai Tzafun. Please tell us where Rabbi Elai is hiding out. Where is he? They wanted to learn from him, and he wasn't available. Whether he was hiding because he wanted to avoid the Talmidim so he could learn a little bit, or he was not there because he was involved in something else. Amar lahen, Alatz v'nara aronit, He was captured by a priestly woman, Acharonit Iranit Vinirato, and she kept him up all night. Amri La Isha, some say this is referring to literally a woman. Amri La Masechta, and some say that was a Masechta that's referring to, that he was engrossed in his learning. The description over here, Rashi gives two interpretations of what it is, which is this priestly woman, Acharonit Iranit, is the original wife. It's still the same wife that he had before. And that's Acharonit, the one that he has now is still the one that he had before. And Iranit, whether Iranit here means from the word er, that she's awake, or that she keeps him awake, that's one possibility. Or the other possibility of Iranit, Rabbeinu Chananel says that she's benot hakfarim, she's from the villages. Iranit is a terminology for the villages, she's a villager. And the other interpretation Rashi brings is Acharonit was his second wife. That his second wife was an Ara Acharonit that kept him awake. So in either instance, it could either be referring to a wife or to a Masechta, which is that either he was engrossed in Kodoshim, and that's what kept him awake, or he was engrossed in Kodoshim and now he moved on to something else, Acharonit being the second, and he moved on to something else. And the same thing with the wives. Either this is the same, his original wife, that kept him up, or he was spending time with her, and therefore he's not available. Or again, Acharonit means this is his second wife that he fell in love with, and he's spending time with her, and that's what kept him up. Amri Lei Le Rabbi Eli. So now we have it in the reverse. They said to Rabbi Eli, Atzpininu Heichan Rabbi Abba Tzafun. Tell us where Rabbi Abba was hiding. Amri Lehen Nitya Eitz B'Machtir. He took advice from the crown. V'hin give the Mephibosheth. And he went south to Mephibosheth. So the Tietz of Machtir refers to the Resh Galuta, that he got permission to Paskin, that's to gain the title of Rabbi. Therefore, v'hin give means he went south. South, the Gemara says in Brachot, or it's the Chakim, he had dreamed that he should go south, that the Talmidei Chachamim were found known to be in the south, or there was more wisdom in the south. Mephibosheth just means a big person, or a gadol. So the Gdolim, he went south to the Gdolim to learn over there, so that he can gain the title of Rabbi. Aro Yeshua ben Chananya, miyamai lo nitzchani adam chutz misha, tinoket vitinok. I was never overcome, I never lost a conversation, I was never wrong in what I said, except for these three instances. Isha mai, what's this case by the woman? Pamachat nitarachti etzalachsanya, achat. It was a time that I stayed by this hostess. Astali pulim. She made me beans. Beyom rishon achaltim. I ate the whole plate. Lo shi'ayti mehem klum. I didn't leave anything over. Shnia. On the second day, she made the same thing. Lo shi'ayti mehem klum. I didn't leave anything over. Beyom ha'shlishi, hikdichatan b'melach. Hikdichatan means she burnt them, but over here means that she oversalted them, that she ruined them with too much salt. Came in shamti. As soon as I tasted it, mashachti yadai mehen. I pulled back. I didn't want to consume anymore. Samarli, Rabbi, mifnei bayin chasuait. Why aren't you eating today? You ate so well the last two nights. Why aren't you eating tonight? Marti la kvar sa'ati mibod yom. I ate earlier today. I'm not so hungry today. Samarli, ayalacha limshoch yadecha min apat. If that was true, you shouldn't have eaten the bread. You ate the bread with gusto, and now all of a sudden with the beans, you're pulling back. So if you'd really eaten, you wouldn't have eaten the bread. So that's clear to me that that's not the reason. Samarli, Rabbi, shema loinachta peya barishonim. Maybe now you're leaving it over because you didn't leave over from the first dishes, which you should have done. Lokacham ruch hachamim, isn't this what the chamim say? Ein misharin peya b'ilfis. You don't leave over the corner in the frying pan about misharin peya b'kara, but you do leave over in the serving dish. The shamash, when he comes to serve the meal, then you have to leave over food for him so that he can eat at the end of the meal. So the practice was that not from the frying pan or what was taken off the oven, you didn't leave over. They poured all of that into the kara, into the large serving dish. But in that serving dish, they used to leave over a little bit for the end of the meal so that the shamash could eat. So over here on the first 2 days, he ate everything. He didn't leave anything over. So she said, maybe you're feeling guilty about what you did the first 2 days. So today you're leaving it all over to make up for what you didn't leave over on the first 2 days. And that's what he meant, that the Isha Nitzchano, that Nitzchani, which is that this woman was right, that he didn't act appropriately on the first days, that he should have left over each day for the shamash. Tinoket mahi. What's the case of tinoket? Tamachat ha'itim aleich v'derech. V'aytah derech overet b'sadeh. I was walking along and there was a path through the field. V'aytim aleich v'ah, and I went through this path in the field. I'm really tinoket achat. This young girl calls out to me, Rabbi, lo sadeh hizu? This is a field. It's private property. How are you walking through there? Samarti lo, lo derech v'ushahi. This is a well-worn path. There's already an easement through this field. Everybody's walked through here. That's why it's a well-worn path. She says, well, how do you think it got well-worn? Because thieves that came before you did the same thing that you did. Since everybody made it into a shortcut, that's why there's a shortcut here. There's no real easement here. The easement came about because people acted inappropriately, and you're just following in the path of those that acted inappropriately. So he again acknowledged that this girl was right about what she's saying. Just because it's a worn path doesn't mean necessarily that there was an easement over there. Tinok, mahi, what's the case of Tinok? Pa'amachat, hayiti melech baderech. I was going along and I saw at the fork in the road, there was a young boy sitting there. Which is the better way to this city from this fork in the road? If you go this direction, it's shorter than longer. And this one is longer and then shorter. I took the path that he said was shorter and longer. When I reached the city on the shorter path, I realized that they were surrounded the city with gardens and orchards, and it was not easy to access the city from there. Bechazarti lo achura, I came back to him, amarti lo bni, alo amarti li ktsara. And then you tell me this is the shorter route. Samarli, alo amarti li charuka. Didn't I say it's also the longer path? Neshachti v'arosho, I kissed him on his head, amarti lo ashreichem Yisrael. Praise be you, Yisrael shechuchem. Chachamim gidolim atem migdolchem ad ketanchem. That you are all so wise and so smart from those that are the great ones, the big ones, until the little ones. So again, he had described here was, yes, that direction, the pathway to the city was shorter, but it ended up being a longer way because the accessibility to the city was much more difficult. The other path was a longer path, but it had direct access into a mavui or an entrance to the city. So even though it was a longer distance, it was an easier way to access the city, and that's what he hinted to him by saying that it was arukah k'tzara, k'tzara arukah. Okay, we'll stop over here.